live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out about what happens when we eat black raspberries. Something good, according to the Korea University Annam Hospital. Then we're going to look at a vitamin that stops the aging process of all your organs from Zurich University. Then we're going to look at a Mediterranean-style diet decreasing the levels of an inflammatory marker called C-reactive protein from the European Union and a major study. And too much red meat, which is any amount of red meat, and too few vegetables can increase your body's biological age, University of Glasgow simply stated. If you eat your meat, not your vegetables, you're going to die quicker. Grape. I've said it 1,000 times. Grape's one of nature's most perfect foods. New research on the polyphenols, which are in the skin of the grape, they can counter the negative effects of the fat in our diet, University of North Carolina. And bitter melon. The extract shows metabolic and anti-obesity effects from Haifa University of Technology in China. I used to use bitter melon by the bushel two or three bushels a day at the Tri-State Healing Center. Every person who was diagnosed with an AIDS-defining illness received about a quart of it a day. It was amazing. I had one person just full-time every day. Well, actually two people, because we opened at 8 in the morning and we closed at midnight. 7 days a week we were there. And we work with a lot of people, 1,200 people with AIDS-defining illnesses. One of the very first things is given this bitter melon. Now, it is bitter. It's like drinking lemon juice, except it has even a worse taste. But we put Manuka honey in it, and that made a difference. And it's one of the single most important antiviral that you can have, but there's another use for it. Also today, a study from Philip Kulepa that the poverty level in New York is a lot higher than what most people think. A new study finds that New York City, the capital of world finance, where the Wall Street elite are really gorging themselves on profits, is also one of the most economically unequal cities in the world. How bad is it? 50%, one half of all New Yorkers are living in or near poverty. Why don't we see them? How they stay hidden? Where are they? I'll get to that. Also, WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks released a report from Matthew Schofield, McClatchy, talking about Iraqi children in a U.S. raid, shot in the head. Then they try to cover it up. How many they kill in this one single raid, of which they would do dozens of raids per night? Well, a whole bunch of people were killed, including they shot a 5-month-old infant in the head, a 70-some-year-old woman, and then they called in an airstrike to cover it up. And that was normal. Also, I'm going to address the war on drugs. According to former Latin American presidents and heads of state, it is an unmitigated disaster. Well, how bad is it? I'll explain how bad it is and why it should not be supported, except by fascists and the private prison corporations and all the people who work in the system. Then it's very good. But for everyone else, no. I'll share some insights from Alternet, from Rania Kalek, on an 8 years in prison for a simple, harmless prank, and how they actually handcuffed a little kid, for doodling. I'm going to talk about the increasing criminalization of students. Let's begin. First up, we always start with the latest on health and healing. And we know that we should be eating a lot of fruit and good fruits and organic fruits, and that's the way it's best getting into our bodies. But once in a while, you'll find some research that there's a particular series of fruit ingredients that are above and beyond what you would realize. And today it's the black raspberry. Interesting, because I was just picking some black wild raspberries just 2 days ago, and about a cupful. And they're very small, half the size of a regular raspberry, not sweet, a little on the sharp side, but extremely rich in nutrients. Here's what these black raspberries can do. They can significantly lower your arterial stiffness. Now, that's a key measure of your cardiovascular disease rates. Remember I said, look at a brand new hose, water hose, and it's pliable, and then let it sit in the sun for 6 months and it's stiff. Well, if your arteries are pliable and healthy, and the inner lining are healthy, the endothelium, you have less likelihood of having a stroke or heart attack. But when they get clogged and they stiffen and harden, the hardening is generally from a mineral calcium. And we have a specific term for hardening of the arteries, arterial sclerosis. And then when you have defects in the arteries and the blood supply to the heart, it's atherosclerosis. And so they're finding if you want healthier arteries and better circulating endothelial progenitor cells, the ones that will help repair and rejuvenate damaged arteries, then you want black raspberries. And by the way, arterial stiffness is considered a key indicator for metabolic syndrome, including diabetes, insulin resistance, and cardiovascular disease. And it's not that they used a lot. They used it for 12 weeks each day, 750 milligrams per day. To give you an idea, that's not even a gram, and it takes 28 grams to make an ounce. So you're dealing with about 1/30th of an ounce. So in a lot of these nutrients, it doesn't take much. Or put another way, if you had a quarter of a cup, you would be exceeding what they did with positive results substantially. And they also found that it was the flavonoids and tannins and phenolic acids and triazole and ellagenins, all these are in there. And that's the chemicals inside the black raspberry. Live longer, eat your black raspberries. Now, there is a vitamin that you didn't know stops the aging process or slows it down of organs, and it is called, I'll spell it for you, nicotin, N-I-C-O-T-I-N, amide, A-M-I-D-E, riboside, R-I-B-O-S-I-D-E, and it is phenomenal. It's already been shown in several studies to be effective in boosting metabolism. And now a team of researchers from the Laboratory of Integrated Systems of Physiology have uncovered even more of what it can do. Writing in the major peer-reviewed journal Science, they describe the positive effects of this single nutrient on the functioning of stem cells, and they said that it is restorative. So that's important. And it also benefits the mitochondria, those your energy cells of the body. And the more mitochondria you have functioning and healthy, the more energy you have, the clearer your thinking, the better your heart, the stronger your muscles, the greater your exercise, the more endurance you have. But as we age, we destroy our mitochondria, mainly through alcohol and fried foods. And then you get to an advanced age, let's say over the age of 50, because biologically, by the time you're 50, you're not 50. Most people at 50 are about 100, biologically. Stress will age you. Lack of exercise ages you. Any coffee ages you. Alcohol in any amount ages you. So all these things age you. So you can't go based upon your chronological age. It's your biological age. So the mitochondria really go down, and then what happens is called mega-channeling, where your mitochondria simply are so weak that they open up and allow the essential DNA inside to leach out, and then the cell dies. So that's important. So you want to have healthier mitochondria? Do you want to have healthier cells to, in effect, have the stem cells in the muscles revitalized? Then you use this nutrient. So it's out there, and it's a very close to vitamin B3, and it's a precursor of NAD, a molecule that plays a key role in mitochondrial activity. And so it will help with muscle regeneration. So for those of you who have been losing your muscles, it will help with that. So this is big. This is a big deal. So for all of you over the age of 30, you should pay attention to that. From the European Union, there is a study showing that the Mediterranean diet, once again, a phenomenal diet, decreases the level of inflammatory marker called C-reactive protein. Now, when you have an elevated C-reactive protein, you won't feel it, you won't know it, and the first time you know it is when you have a heart attack, or a stroke, or cancer, or bone loss, and end up with osteoporosis, because that's what an elevated C-reactive protein does. So when you're sticking to this diet, lots of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, then you're going to have a longer lifespan and be healthier. And too much red meat and too few veggies can increase your biological age. This is according to the University of Glasgow. Now, most Americans eat way too much meat. So let's put it this way. I actually did this as a study in the lab. I did what was called a doctor's diet. And the doctor's diet was gleaned from the hospitals on the Upper East Side, or down to at least Bellevue and New York University Medical Center, but all the ones in between, and Rockefeller University, and wanted to see Sloan Kettering, just speaking with physicians, what would be a diet they would recommend to their patients. And all told, we had over a period of about 4 months, hundreds of responses. It's very easy. You just go and stand outside at lunchtime as they come out. You have someone say, I'm just doing a survey. What kind of diet would you recommend for your patients? And they tell you, more often than not. And so I looked at this diet. I did a complete analysis of it, and I found that this is a death diet. This is a disease diet. There's absolutely nothing in the diet that's good. Nothing. And they didn't recommend organic, living foods, juices, none of that. They were all meat-based, and because they believe in the food pyramid. They were fully indoctrinated about just give a dietitian your diet and let them figure it out. So, here's what you got to know. Unless it's a vegan doctor, and there are many who are helping their patients get well on just diet and not medications, then understand that the diet that you're eating, filled with meat and too few vegetables, this will age your biological clocks. Researchers, University of Glasgow, publishing today in Aging, have found that a moderate increase in serum phosphate levels caused by red meat consumption combined with a poor diet overall increases biological age, meaning the miles on the clock, in contrast to the chronological age, the years of age. And the study, which looked at particular aspects of the diet in a broad base of individuals, just found that, wow, you are not your chronological age. You're not 30, 40, 50. You're your biological age. And if you've been eating meat, you're way older at the cellular level than you are on the chronological level. And this was also done at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. They found that high phosphate levels is depriving males corrected with reduced kidney function and even underlying kidney disease. So remember, anytime you eat any kind of meat, any kind, you're going to get elevated phosphate. Bad for the system. It ages you. So keep that in mind. And finally, the grape. The grape is just a miracle food, in my opinion. And the polyphenols help counter negative effects of a high-fat diet. This is from University of North Carolina. Quote, grape polyphenols helped offset some of the adverse health consequences of consuming a high-fat diet, rich in saturated fat. That's a typical American diet. And two separate studies, and this was published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. And they enriched the diet with 3% of the diet for 11 weeks being grapes. So they gave him a grape powder, and it made an enormous difference, enormous. So if you want to help cleanse the body, reduce fat, detoxify, get your grapes in there. Well, I just did mention bitter melon at the introduction. And at the Hefei University of Technology in China, they found that the extracts of the seeds of bitter melon can help reduce body weight, and that's good. This is published in the Journal of Nutrition Intermediate Metabolism. We knew it's a great antiviral. Hepatitis, herpes, HIV, whatever virus, it helps kill them and doesn't do a single negative thing to the body. Parasites in the intestine helps you get rid of them. Also, it will help you if you have worms. A lot of people have worms, especially people who thought they're being really, you know, hip by eating sushi. Well, eating sushi is not hip. And if you looked under a microscope, and I've done this, I actually would get people, in fact, I'll never forget this. So at nighttime, people would come over to the Institute and they'd come up to the third floor because they locked off. I had my own, well, there was a general entrance, and I'd buzz people in. And then they'd come up to the third floor of where I was, and the rest of the Institute was closed. No one worked at night. It was quiet, and I wasn't being interrupted. And people would ask questions, and they could actually watch as I was doing my experiments. And one day the question came up about, would I recommend sushi? I said, no, for several reasons. Because fish also suffer pain. And B, because you're going to make yourself susceptible to worms. Well, I've never seen worms. And so I said to the person, then go downstairs. There's a high-end Upper East Side sushi restaurant. Go in and get a piece of sushi and bring it back. I'll pay for it. You know, whatever it was, $20. So they came back, and I said, now take a look. And you just take a small little sliver, and you put it under the microscope, and I said, take a look. Sure enough, found worms. So you have no idea how many times people have indigestion, gas, bloating, diarrhea, and it's because of worms. Because if you don't eat something well-cooked, you're going to make yourself very susceptible, especially for any form of pork. And you start eating those sandwiches of ham, and you get them, and you just open up the package, put it on bread, and eat it. How do you know that that has been heated at high enough temperature to kill all the spores and there in the worms? You have no proof of that, none. You're taking someone's word for it. Well, just be aware of that. By the way, just today there was an enormous recall of frozen foods because of Listeria. A whole lot of brands and Trader Joe's and some other brands of vegetables. And I called. I wanted to know what was going on so I could share that information. So I called the company, called the recall section, 15 different vegetables. And Listeria can kill you. It's a very serious condition. But we are a country that doesn't, we either overcook something, like deep frying it, or yes, you'll kill the microorganisms in it, in the worms, but now you've created, with a batter on it, you've created acrylamides, cancer-causing, and the protein itself, you've overcooked it. Now you got heterocyclic amines. The two together have a synergy to create cancer. So we got to get a whole other way of looking at food if we want to live a longer life. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. And I want to share a few things before we take a little break here. First, I thought you would find this of interest. This is from World Socialist website, Philip Gulpa. Quote, New York City, the capital of world finance, is also one of the most economically unequal cities in the world. One, if incomplete, measure of this social disparity comes in a new study by the city's Commission on Economic Opportunity, which reports that as 20% of the residents of America's most populous city lived in poverty, and that was in 2011. It's gotten a lot worse since then, where the average person's, at least half the people, live on $30,945 for a family of four. That's two adults and two children. And that's really challenging for people to live and have any quality on that. And then it goes up from there. So we have an awful lot of people living in the city. And in fact, one group here, in 2011, 46% of New Yorkers were living on less than 150% of the poverty rate per year. And it was increasing at 3% per year. Now it's up to 50%. And yet we don't see these people. Well, what we do see, it's not that we couldn't find them. You can. It's just that you got to know where to look. For example, when you look at the side streets of all the brownstones, we think about a brownstone being a place where a rich person buys it and lives there themselves. That's very rare. More often than not, you have some rent-stabilized or rent-controlled apartments that the landlords are trying to get rid of. And you have people who are older, who have limited means. New York has a high level of senior citizens who are living off pensions, Social Security, and they just don't have a high income. They have to live on very meager means. And you see that frequently in the restaurants that have the early bird special at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And when I had my restaurant, I used to find this. Who would think that people go to dinner at 4 o'clock? Well, if you're giving 20% off at 4 o'clock and suddenly you're packed and you got a waiting line to get in, and you ask people, why are you coming at 4 o'clock? Well, I can afford it. You mean if you came at 7, you couldn't? Don't have that disposable money I once had. They'll tell you. So you find this everywhere. But we don't look for that person. Your mind is almost in a gestalt when you're in Manhattan. You're in different Upper East Side. You're in nice neighborhoods. You're expecting down in Soho that everyone's rich, that all the, you know, at night everybody goes to a local bar and hangs out and socializes. But it's just not the case. Under 1% of people living in New York City actually go out on a regular basis to socialize. 1%. Because you go to a nightclub and there are 150 people in there, well, fine. You got 20 million people living in the, what is 150 is a percentage of 20 million. Most people are not out there. They just don't have the money. So we have a lot of poor people living in New York City, over 50%, and we're doing nothing to help them. And in Australia, first of all, is virtually a non-sustainable country in the future. It is going to have, it'll be one of the hottest continents in the world, and with no water. It's running out of water, massive fires, and yet it has some of the most expensive places in the world to live, like Sydney and Brisbane. And these are modern, architectural, beautiful places, but the prices of property have gone through the roof. So you think it's progressive? Australia's got one of the most regressive, autocratic, closed-minded governments on the planet. This is the latest from Patrice Lavenet. Australia, U.S. financially penalized citizens refusing vaccines. Quote, the war on informed consent rights is getting more intense, with alarming new threats to our freedom to make vaccine choices popping up worldwide. We can't help but ask ourselves, what kind of societal sanctions can possibly be suggested next that will trample on our human and paternal rights? Well, look no further than Australia, where the government is dipping into citizens' wallets to penalize parents when they opt their children out of one or more doses of government-mandated vaccines. Under the Public Health and Well-being Law, effective this past January, Australians who fail to vaccinate their children will lose $7,500 annual child care rebate, 200 plus weekly childhood benefits, and $726 family tax benefit Part A end-of-year supplement. Total welfare amounts vary depending upon the family economic circumstances. And so they're saying, you don't vaccinate, then we're taking away all your money that you would otherwise be able to help your kid with. So then you've got to assume that they have the facts on their side, that vaccines are safe and effective, or they wouldn't be engaging in such draconian effects. I did a 1.5-hour original special on vaccines on my Monday program. If you did not have a chance to listen to it, go to the archives and download and listen. It is part one on the safety of vaccines. And I actually did this for Dr. Andrew Wakefield. I want to see what his reaction is. And I want to see whether he and Robert Kennedy Jr. and others who have shown the corruption within the field of vaccination, which is accurate, but they're still advocating people get their vaccines. In fact, they're doing jumping jacks and somersaults to get people vaccinate. And I'm having to say, hold on a second. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that vaccines are safe and effective, but we want the corruption gone in the field. And occasionally, if you have too many vaccines at the same time, it might hurt a child who is susceptible genetically, but spread them out and it's fine. And then when you get beaten against the wall like a rag doll, with the child who's got a temper tantrum, and they throw you out of medicine, why don't you then come back and do your homework? Because it's very disappointing from my perspective to see people who are not just pro-vaccine, but almost radically pro-vaccine when the evidence shows just the opposite, the science. So if you are really a scientist, if you're really a scholar, then why don't you join the ranks of Dr. Tony Bark and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Dr. Banks and Dr. Stoller and all the others who have done their homework and have found no evidence for the safety or efficacy of a single vaccine. And I proved with full documentation, and my article is posted on my website, you can go there and read it today, that vaccines have never been proven safe, not by any gold standard whatsoever. And then see whether or not that helps you alter your perception of the issue. Hopefully it will. And now let's see if that information is shared and spread. So I'd like people to read the article. It's up on my website, GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and then share it. Send it out all over the world, everyone you know, because this is the only way that we can stop the Australian government and stop the people in California at the government level from getting away with the crimes I consider personally the crimes against humanity. You've got to be informed, and we've got the evidence. And from Medical Express, one of the most frustrating issues modern parents face is how to manage children's screen time. Now, officially, they say if your child is 5 to 18 years of age, they should spend no more than 2 hours a day using screens, any kind of screens. And they looked at 18,000 children, and they find they're spending a lot more time than 2 hours. Some are spending up to 6-8 hours a day, and that's hurting the child on many different levels, not just the electromagnetic pulses coming off the screens, computers, cell phones, iPads, but it also is dumbing them down. It negates critical thinking. You don't have to think. All you have to do is just type in something and an answer comes to you, whether or not the answer is honest or not. So be careful about even 2 hours a day, I believe, is too much. I would limit it to 1 hour a day. Give them a half hour in the morning, half hour in the evening. Also on the internet, I rarely do, but this has just gotten so out of hand. Every single doctor that dies anywhere in America, they're claiming was murdered because they discovered the enzyme that affects cancer. This is all nonsense. All of it is nonsense. I've investigated it. I know some of these doctors. One of these doctors is a close, longtime friend of mine. He died of a heart attack. He did not have a healthy diet. He didn't exercise. He was highly stressed. That happens. And the fact that they're creating something that does not exist, and there's so many contradictions. They're lumping people in there who have no research science background at all. It's just what happens on the internet when people just stop thinking critically and just accept that whatever's on the internet must be correct. instead of realizing how much disinformation is out there, how many trolls are out there, how much misinformation is planted on people's sites with the idea that if you promote it, then you could be criticized for promoting nonsense. And I've looked at this. This is nonsense. And it's unfortunate people don't do the homework. That's why I won't post anything on that. We're going to take a break and come back. We have some very interesting stuff to share with you. Please stay with us.
Oh, the shark bait has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heath, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. The War on Drugs. How much of our thoughts on the war on drugs are controlled by those ideologues like Bill O'Reilly, who believes that all drugs are bad, but doesn't go after prescription drugs, and also he himself, from what I understand, enjoys social alcohol. Well, any alcohol is destructive. All you have to do, I wrote a book on it. All you have to do is look at how many brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, heart cells are destroyed with a single drink of hard alcohol. It's in the millions per each drink. And that's cumulative because a lot of those cells you can't grow back. Well, we saw what happened when we had a war on alcohol through prohibition, and suddenly we had, organized crime, La Cosa Nostra, Lucky Luciano, Meyer Lansky, Genovese, Frank Costello. We had a whole rogues gallery of sociopaths, psychopaths, people willing to do anything to get a drink, and they supplied it, and we did a lot of harm. We've done far more harm when it comes to war on drugs because we've expended hundreds of billions of dollars and all the lives that have been hurt. And yet we say that we're a nation that believes in freedom of choice. So you have a choice of which tranquilizer you want, Prozac, Zoloft, Effexor, and you have a choice of which statin drugs you want. You have a choice of which type of COX-2 inhibitors. Why can't we legalize drugs, take the crime out of it, take the profit incentive out, and for those who need help withdrawing from the drugs, give that help, but don't criminalize it. And then have counseling centers throughout the United States. We have a lot of good counselors who can give people an opportunity to get back into society, back into their families. This is the latest. This is from Common Dreams. Quote, "The war on drugs is an unmitigated disaster." Former Latin American heads of state. That's the resounding judgment of three former Latin American presidents who write in an op-ed published in the Los Angeles Times that the best way to approach the problem is one that puts health and human rights first. Fernando Cardoso, former president of Brazil, Cesar Gaviria, former president of Colombia, and Ernesto Zedillo, former president of Mexico, describe how a session at the UN General Assembly dealing with the global drug problem missed an opportunity. And why? Because they're still not aware, or choose not to be aware, that it is better to legalize it, stop criminalizing it, and look at how many people need it. Because if you say how many people want drugs, and who are these people? It's a full spectrum of people in the United States. It's not relegated to one class. That's a myth. Interesting, when I was down in Camden, New Jersey, filming, there was an area that you just didn't go into. Every single block or two had drug dealers on them. And you could always tell because in the windows of some of the houses, you could see people, some with binoculars, and they were the lookouts. They were looking to see unmarked police cars or rival gangs. And then down on the street, you would see five, six, seven guys hanging around a car. And people would pull up, they get their drugs, and they go on. Well, I went down to film them. I wanted to hear their story. And the police told me not to, because it would be dangerous. And indeed, it could have been dangerous, but I didn't think that that if you'd ask a drug dealer, would you tell us your story? I think a lot of them would want to tell their story. Indeed, they do. And there's a huge area. We're talking about 20 blocks wide, 10 blocks long. That's a lot of blocks of people that it's just all drugs. But it's not the minority people of color who are the primary users. Most of their drugs, according to the dealers, are white upper middle class kids living in the suburban Philadelphia area, which is right across the river from Camden. Camden at one time was one of the most prosperous cities in the United States, had zero unemployment because that's where all the shipbuilding was done. Campbell Soup was there. RCA Victor television radios were made there. All these historic and very famous icon companies were in Camden, New Jersey, and they had a thriving middle class, upper middle class. And then when all those were made overseas or closed down completely, the unemployment rate just shot up through there, and there wasn't enough support to have a tax base to pay for the infrastructure they needed. So I went into one man's house. He was outside, and he was watching me, and I walked over to him, and I said, I'm here to do a film on what it's like living in Camden. Could you give me a few moments and just give me your perspective? He said, sure. So when we went into his apartment, I noticed there was no door. And I said, what happened to your door? He said, better not to have a door. Why is that? Because when the gangs come down the street, which they do every week, if you have a locked door, they're going to kick it in. And then they're going to really beat you up. If you don't have a door, so you come in and they see you don't have anything, they still may beat you up, but it's not as bad as if you're hiding or don't want them in. I'd never heard of anything like that today. I'd never seen anything like that today. And I said, why are you here? He said, well, I used to live for my entire adult life in Philadelphia. I worked in the area. I had a family. I had a home. And then when I was laid off and I had some disabilities, my pain was excruciating. And my pain meds were very expensive, but also the side effects were devastating. And someone then told me that marijuana or heroin or morphine could knock out the pain. I said, well, morphine can also kill you. Heroin can kill you. Marijuana can't. He said, well, it's a lot cheaper to come over here and buy it. And he said, that's why I'm here. That's why some other people are here. Again, I had never heard this, that it's for people who have pain to go into a really bad neighborhood. Mind you, Camden is considered the most dangerous city in America per population. Now, Chicago has more killings, but it's a larger city. But Camden is right up there. Absolute abject poverty. And he said, I save money. That's the only reason I'm here. And his face had been beaten up. His jaw had been broken. He had problems with his teeth, all because the gangs will take anything you have. And he said, they'll take your shoes. They'll take anything you have. So you better show that you have nothing for them to take. They go through the doors. They don't see anything. Then they'll leave you alone. So when he gets his Social Security check, he goes out, he cashes it, he goes in, and he buys drugs. Who would have thought, right? Who would have thought? Well, now you have the world leaders in the countries, at least except for Afghanistan. But today, Brazil and Colombia and Mexico are major drug hubs, in which case you have narco-terrorists there. They're far more sophisticated than what they've been in the past. Many of them are ex-military. Many of them are currently involved in the government, including the national police in Mexico. They've infiltrated everything, and they spend a lot of their money in buying people's properties, in effect a form of extortion, lead or silver. The silver is take the money we're offering you and get out. If not, well, in the next day or two, someone will come by and put a bullet in your head. And you can't go to the police. We own them. You can't go to the newspapers. We'll kill them. You can't go to the judges. We own them. You can't go to the politicians. We own them. So who are you going to go to? Who are you going to complain to? And then you start to realize, wow, this is really serious. How bad is it in Mexico alone, since they started the official war on drugs there about 10 years ago, between dead, confirmed, and missing and presumed dead, 150,000 people. And in some areas, a mayor was on the job one day and killed, a chief of police one day and killed the next day with virtual impunity. And so, quote, here's what these three presidents of Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico say. A better solution for member states to pursue is one that actually promotes the health and welfare of humanity, stops criminalizing and incarcerating of drug users, and ends the medieval practice of death penalty for drug-related crimes. I want you to hear this audio clip because it gives us an insight on who the largest drug dealers are and who protects the largest drug dealer in Mexico. I think you'll find this important.
The nation's largest cocaine smuggler been revealed to be the Drug Enforcement Agency? Well, for decades, it's been rumored that the United States government was secretly sponsoring the smuggling of cocaine into the country. Federal officials have long denied such speculation, pointing out the billions of dollars spent intercepting drugs. Newly released documents and testimony from Justice Department and DEA officials now show the stories of government running cocaine are in fact true. An investigation conducted in Mexico found the American government allowed that country's largest drug cartel, Sinaloa, to operate without fear of persecution. That group is estimated to be responsible for 80% of the cocaine coming into the United States through Chicago. In exchange, the leaders of Sinaloa provided the Drug Enforcement Agency in Washington, D.C. information on their rival gangs. The drug cartel working with the federal government is run by Joaquin El Capo Guzman. He is considered to be the world's most powerful drug trafficker. And in addition to Chicago, his group also maintains cocaine operations in several major cities around the nation. Written statements were provided to a U.S. district court in Chicago confirming the alliance between the DEA and Mexico's largest cocaine cartel. The written testimony, combined with other evidence, shows the Drug Enforcement Agency officials met with leaders of the Sinaloa cartel more than 50 times between 2000 and 2012. This would mean DEA-authorized drug smuggling goes back to at least the beginning of the George W. Bush administration and continued for a year under Barack Obama. One of the group's leaders, Vicente Zambada Nivella, claims that the American government also sent military-grade weapons to the Sinaloa cartel. According to the latest revelations, it was these weapons which were part of the Fast and Furious scandal. Automatic firearms, which disappeared during that operation, led by Eric Holder, were used to kill U.S. border agents. This latest evidence and testimony points towards a massive scandal involving both Republican and Democratic administrations. At the very best, this provides the best evidence so far that the federal government was sponsoring the smuggling of billions of dollars of cocaine into the United States. Worse still, weapons purchased for the United States military have been sent to the cartel and used to kill American agents. Those actions transcend any party politics, and the jury is still out. We'll follow the story and bring you the latest.
We're a highly addictive behavior nation. Shouldn't we be looking at what is driving the demand? And then if you take the profit away, then all these drug-related killings, these gangs, they no longer have an income flow. And therefore, that won't be the same as it was in the past. Hundreds of billions of dollars are earned every year from keeping drugs illegal, and incarcerating them. We have 2.4 million people in American prisons today, and over 70% of them are for drug-related crimes. That's just absurd. It is my opinion that we should let all those drug-related nonviolent people out of jail, expunge their record, and give them an opportunity to be counseled so that they can get back into society and help repair a lot of the damage done by the stigma of them being imprisoned to their family members. And now, I had an idea recently. This was about before I went out on the road about 3 months ago and to do all that I'm doing now. We have way too many people that have too many problems to help everyone. But I always look for talented therapists, physicians, dentists, psychologists, psychiatrists, physiotherapists, anyone who can help alleviate pain. And these are all independent people. They have nothing to do with me. But I ask a nurse practitioner, that's someone who's virtually equal to a physician, who specializes in holistic ways of dealing with mental illness, getting people off drugs, getting people to detoxify, both emotionally and physically. So I ask a person, would they be willing to come into the city, because they're not in the city, they're practiced out on Long Island, so it's a sacrifice for them, to come in on a day when people who live in Manhattan might be available or in the surrounding area to get help. And they said they would. Her name is June Kiefer. She's on the line now. Hi, June.
Gary.
You would be coming in on a Sunday and helping people on a Sunday?
Yes, and it would be my honor.
Okay, and you're going to be working with people who have depression, anxiety, and
correct,
who want to get off meds, right?
Correct. Yes.
And you've had a lot of experience in helping detoxify people off Prozac, Paxil, and all these other meds, right?
Absolutely. And the success rate, when you medicate somebody, you're simply applying an artificial means to an internal situation, and you're never, ever addressing the core issues. In my practice, which I've been doing for over 3 decades, I have found extremely high success rates when people talk. And I'm not talking about having a discussion with your best friend. I'm talking about discussing core issues. We all have them. And it's about bringing them up to the surface, and we no longer have to be controlled by those voices that we hear that were either the critical voices from our parents or our childhood, and we get stuck in that moment, and that moment defines our choices today. So in therapy, what I subscribe to is just to tap into the person in the here and now.
So just to recall here, we're going to, June is, I'm not, I'm just a provider of trying to find people some solutions. And she is very compassionate, and you ask her about her fees, but from what I understand, they're about half what you would normally spend. And that was one of the criteria. When I look for a holistic dentist or a psychiatrist, I want to make sure that the audience can afford them. Unlike me, they don't work for free. I work for free, they don't. But they're quality people, and if they weren't, and I didn't personally have confidence in them, I wouldn't recommend that you at least see if they could help you. So give me your phone number, and you'll be starting to work in Manhattan once a week on Sundays for those who need help with depression,
correct,
with anxiety, and getting off medications, getting their body cleansed and healthy. And you're a vegan?
Yes.
Give your phone number.
Important. Area code 631-981-8807.
Again?
631-981-8807.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
And that's June Kiefer. So, at least for those people who have those conditions, we have hopefully found someone who can guide you in the process. And as I'm still looking for holistic cardiologists, I'm looking for holistic oncologists, I'm looking for a holistic rheumatologist. I'm looking for a holistic OGBYN. And I get a lot of names and numbers, and I talk with people. And again, many of the people I speak to may be good, but they may be very expensive, or they may not spend a lot of time. I ask, how much time do you actually spend with patients? And so 90% of the time, I just don't find I could recommend people. So when I do, you can be sure they've gone through my critical evaluation. Okay, and as I get more people in the future with more specializations to help people, I'll pass it on to you. That's all I can do. But always be critical yourself. Ask all the serious questions. Just don't go in and assume anything. See how they're going to help you. See what approach they would take. And in this case, getting people off the meds they shouldn't be on, that is a real challenge. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.